I thought you were gonna say something. You told me not to. You don't.
Are you ready?
No.
Ready, go.
Hi, everybody. This is episode 6 of Where You're From, a history and comedy podcast by Hitomi and Max.
Hello.
Hello. The premise of this podcast is I talk about Max's historical background, his cultural history, which is mainly the UK.
You tell me what's what.
Yeah. And then vice versa. Max tells about my cultural history, which
is a hell of a lot of cultures.
Well, that gives you a bigger range, doesn't it?
Yeah, we're talking Japan, we're talking Philippines, we might be talking China one day.
Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe a little bit of Spain.
Yeah, but mostly my culturally growing up was mostly Filipino-Japanese.
Yes.
Which is funny because Filipino is very influenced by China and Spain as well.
It's all the same thing, isn't it?
We do the 12 grapes in the mouth at midnight on New Year's.
What the hell are you talking about?
That's Spanish, I think.
I do 12 grapes pretty much every night.
Yeah,
it's called a bottle of wine.
12 grapes for a bottle of wine.
Well, the cheap wine that I buy.
Or the tiniest bottle.
Tiniest bottle, yeah.
Alright.
It's mainly water. Last week, we kind of briefly touched on where we're from. I wanted to ask you this week, how's your school life in the Philippines?
Well, from preschool to university, I went to Catholic schools. So, preschool, I went to St. Benedict's Childhood Education Center.
Catchy name.
SBCEC.
Yeah, it sounds like a bank.
It does.
It sounds like a bank, yeah.
It was a Catholic school, co-ed. The owner of the school, the principal, Miss Ibanez, was loved by all. And her house was in the school compound.
Oh.
You could actually go up and see the back of her. It was like part of the building of the school.
Yeah.
One of the buildings of the school. And she had around, when I was there, in the 90s, she had around 12 dogs.
12 dogs?
12 dogs, and she had this Dalmatian called Lady. We remember Lady. And
Lady!
My friends and I, because ever since I was little, I love dogs.
Big dog lover.
Yes. And yeah, we used to go up to her house to see the dogs.
Nice.
Yeah. We could interact with them. Lady.
That's nice. Yeah.
She had a Shih Tzu, a big fat Shih Tzu called Momo. Momo? I have to confirm that with my old friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah.
Sounds very nice. How about your, higher education?
So I was there in St. Ben till elementary school, and then I went to Sacred Heart School for Girls.
This was
high school.
High school.
Yeah, so my 4 years of high school was, it was a Chinese Catholic high school, so we had to learn Chinese.
Really?
But since I and some of my friends from the same school went there in high school,
you're now fluent.
We were in the quote unquote special Chinese class, which was basically like free period for us. Didn't really learn anything. I learned how to say Our Father in the prayer, the Lord's Prayer.
Which you're going to demonstrate right now.
No, that was 20 years ago, so
Money well spent. Yeah, money well spent. All right.
Yes.
And how about university?
So university, I mentioned last week that I went to Ateneo for a year.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I had a...
Where Rizal went.
Rizal studied, and then I flunked out. First year...
So what? You're a dropout. You're a bum.
Well, I transferred schools.
You transferred. So you finished.
I finished the first year in Ateneo, and then I transferred to. I went back home to Cebu, and then studied IT in University of San Carlos.
Okay.
Yeah, and finished that.
Yeah.
And then actually went back to school again and got a degree in education. So. Yeah.
So you've got two degrees?
Sorta.
Oh. This is my wife I'm talking to here. And I'm surprised at everything. You have 2 degrees? 3 degrees?
You know, we do talk, but the problem is Max doesn't remember anything.
I don't remember a thing, no.
Yeah. So, yeah, I do have education and IT.
Okay. Interesting.
Interesting. And what about you? Can you still remember? That was a long, long time ago.
Well, I had a very kind of just normal schooling in Leicester, in England. I was, it was all kind of Church of England.
Yeah.
Church of England.
Can I ask one thing before you start?
Yeah.
It's always been confusing because public schools...
Yeah.
...are private schools in England.
Exactly.
Yeah, right? But how is that? Mm. Why do you call it public schools? It's private. And what do you call, like, public schools?
Public schools are just schools.
Are just schools.
Yeah. But there are private schools.
What's the difference between public and private?
Well, in my mind, public schools, when you say public
in
schools...
In your mind.
In my very twisted mind, public schools are like old-fashioned, like hoity-toity, you know, boarding schools and all that sort of thing.
So they were... Probably they were the public schools in the olden times.
Yeah, like imagine Stephen Fry's school. Can you imagine that? No, it's too much. But I went to a kind of normal school, like public schools that were actually public.
Yeah.
Yeah, Church of England schools, just blasted through the years, and I left when I was 16.
I know. Drop
out.
I cannot imagine doing that.
Drop out. But best decision I've ever made. It was a decision. Because it led me to other things, and eventually, at the age of 24, thanks to King Richard, his statue, led me to taking history as a mature student at the age of 24. That's a mature student. That means you don't have to pay for anything.
What?
Everything's paid for. Because you're mature.
That's a thing?
It's a thing. I wanted to go to this university, East London University. Obviously, I was a dropout. I had no qualifications, not even high school qualifications. But I wanted to study history, so I wrote them a nice letter. Wrote the university a nice letter saying, I'm very interested in history. Could you please accept me? I will really try my best.
Did you handwrite it?
Yes, I handwrote it with a quill. And I said, and you have lovely accommodation right on the riverside, and I would love to live there for free if possible. And they said, sure.
Do you still have that letter?
I do at home somewhere in England,
oh.
Where I'm from. Yeah. Yeah.
I'd love to read that.
And I went to university, East London University, which is not one of the best, but they accepted me. And I passed my first year, failed my second year twice, and then...
Did not finish.
Left for Japan. So that was my education.
Wow.
Bit of a bandit.
Like your dad.
Bit of a bandit, and I still owe them a shit ton of money. Did a runner.
Why? I thought it was free.
Yeah, but they gave me money as well. They gave me like 10 grand in loans every year.
Oh my.
To live a life.
Whew.
And I took that 10 grand 1 year and just poof, came to Japan. Like a vagabond. You told me.
Yes.
Hit me with your history.
Okay. Last week was about the original Gotham. I'm going back to Leicester.
Ooh.
Leicester
a
time.
Place I know
I can
well.
Only jump around in England.
I know. You can't, you're not really limited because the history of England is just outstanding.
Well, I know, but it's not like you where you get to travel from the Philippines to Japan.
It's a lot of
international.
A lot of work.
Yeah, but me, I get to stay just in England.
Oh, good for you. Lovely place.
Yeah.
Not as nice as Japan, but yeah. Nah, it's brilliant.
So I am talking about a person from Leicester.
Gary Lineker.
No.
Okay.
His name is Daniel?
Who is called Daniel?
Some people say Daniel.
Daniel?
Yeah.
Who says Daniel?
People.
So these people are rubbish.
Daniel?
Listeners, if you say Daniel, then please unsubscribe.
No, don't.
And leave a bad rating. Yeah.
Please don't.
Don't unsubscribe. All right.
All right. So Daniel Lambert.
Daniel Lambert.
You told me you know him.
Fatty.
Yeah. So Daniel Lambert was known as the fattest. Fattest man in England.
He's very, very famous in Leicester.
Mm.
Not sure how famous he is outside of Leicester.
Oh, but you will find out soon.
Ooh, well, do tell me.
So his basic intro is he was a jail keeper.
Ooh.
But they all, because this happened, he was born in the 1700s, 1770.
Yeah.
They call it a gaol. It's spelled G-A-O-L, and I just talked to you about this. So apparently it's pronounced also as jail, but spelled G-A-O-L.
But I always thought it was gaol.
I know, gaol, but I looked at it again, and it's not even gaol, it's like gaol.
Okay.
Yeah. But I will...
It's like we'll have a gay old time.
And then he's a gaol keeper.
Yeah.
Here. But every time I type that in, my notes thing, it would always autocorrect it to goalkeeper.
He would have been a good goalkeeper, though.
Oh, he would fill the whole net thing.
So when was Daniel Lambert born?
He was born in March 13th, 1770.
Okay.
His father was also named Daniel Lambert.
Mm-hmm.
Had been the huntsman. So what is a huntsman? Do you know?
He's a man that hunts.
Well, it's a job.
Bit of a what? Something that rhymes with hunt.
A person who manages a hunt and looks after the hounds.
Yeah, so yeah. It's exactly what it sounds like.
But he does more than that.
Hmm.
So he was the huntsman to Harry Grey, the 4th Earl of Stamford.
Okay.
Stamford.
Stamford.
Yeah.
Where is Stamford?
I don't know. Should I have looked that up?
Probably should. Yeah.
Where is it?
Well, keep talking because I'm going to look it up.
So at the time of Daniel Jr.'s birth, he was the keeper of Leicester's jail. So I'm going to say jail now, not gaol or gaol. I'm going to say jail. And most of Daniel's family was in the animal business. His father was a huntsman. And his uncle on his dad's side was a gamekeeper.
Right.
And his mom's dad, so Daniel's grandfather, was a breeder of champion fighting cocks.
Ooh. Yes. Yeah. Like to fight cocks.
Yes, which is a thing in the Philippines until now.
He was a huntsman and a
cock
fighter. And a cock, yeah. All
right. Yeah. So it's still a thing in the Philippines. I've shown you, right? Like, I know. There's places, like, we have actual, like mini arenas and
last
stadiums.
Last time we went to Cebu in the Philippines, yeah. I got involved in cockfighting.
No.
Like you wouldn't believe.
Well, while I was asleep in the hotel.
Yes, I was flinging those potatoes around, those pesos around.
Okay. So, as you can see, Daniel had a fairly active life.
Yes.
He had a strong interest in field sports.
He did.
Do you know what field sports are?
A hot dog eating competition.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Field sports, like hockey and all that sort of thing.
Well, sports that you play in a field.
All right.
And at that time would include like hunting and stuff as well.
Oh, okay.
He loved otter hunting.
Otter
hunting. Fishing, shooting, and horse racing.
So he was quite upper class.
I guess if your dad works for the Earl, like, as a huntsman, And was also the jail warden keeper.
Okay.
Lester's jail keeper.
Yeah. Mm. So they had a few coins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At one point, he was such an avid swimmer that he taught local children how to swim.
Hero. Yeah.
He also followed in his dad's footsteps and was considered an expert in breeding hunting dogs.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Everyone followed in his footsteps because he was so fat, they were so big.
What does that even mean?
Not a lot.
What does that even mean?
Not a lot. You haven't even told us how fat he is. We've not got to that part yet.
No.
Okay.
So, in 1784, he was an apprentice at an engraving and die-casting factory in Birmingham.
Okay.
But the buckles and buttons in which the factory made became unfashionable.
Oh,
okay. So the business went into decline.
Ah, poor Daniel.
Yeah, so he was 14 at this point.
He's only 14?
Yeah.
And he's working in the factory?
Well...
Yeah, I guess 14's old at that time, isn't it?
Yeah, it's middle-age.
Middle-age, yeah.
And when he was... 18, he returned to Leicester to be his dad's assistant at the jail.
Ah.
So he started working there.
This is in Stamford?
No, Leicester Jail.
Leicester Jail?
Yeah. The dad was the huntsman for the Earl of Stamford. Who knows, his house might have been in Leicester.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he might not have lived in Stamford.
No.
Might have been living in Leicester.
Mm.
Oh. Mm. Okay.
And after Daddy Daniel retired...
At the age of 6, yeah.
Daniel Jr., our Daniel, became the new jailkeeper.
Mm.
It's kind of like a lot of jobs may have seemed to be like,
passed down.
Passed down from, yeah. Yeah, the family.
Yeah, of course. Well, it's not like you could go to the job center or, you know, look on the internet, is it? So you get what you're given, really.
Yeah, when he was lucky.
I mean, he tried to branch out in the factory, in the old belt buckle.
That didn't work.
In the factory, and look where that got him.
That didn't work.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
The jail,
is
it the jail in the Guildhall?
I don't think so, because this jail closed.
Oh.
And, yeah, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. Alright, so Daniel, our Daniel. Is it Daniel the name of our favorite from the Undateables? See, Daniel.
Daniel, yeah.
Yeah.
My lovely one.
And at the time of his return to Leicester from Birmingham...
Yeah, nice.
His weight began to increase steadily, even though he was athletically active, according to his own accounts.
Yeah, just like I am, yeah.
He said he also abstained from drinking alcohol.
Yeah, I bet.
And did not eat unusual amounts of food. Yeah, if no one sees you eat it, doesn't count.
No. Yeah. I'm sure he was just feasting in those jail cells.
By 1793, so he is 23 years old now.
Yeah.
He weighed 32 stone.
32 stone. Of course, hardly anyone in the world knows what a stone is.
I've got a stone side note.
Ooh, baby.
Yeah. So this is a tangent.
Okay.
So using stone as weight measurement dated back to biblical times where literal stones were used as weights.
Yeah.
It became more uniform when the Romans made it more standard.
Hmm.
In the UK, there were varying measurements of a stone. So the English stone under law depended on the product it was meant to represent. So one stone of glass was actually 5 pounds of glass.
Bloody hell.
And things like beeswax, sugar, pepper, cumin, almonds, cinnamon, and nutmeg were 12 pounds to a stone.
Too much maths.
I know, you'd have to carry a little notebook.
A little calculator.
Remember. So yeah. It wasn't until 1350 that Edward III issued a new statute defining the stone weight to be used for wool, and other merchandises at £14.
Uh-huh.
And it carried on being used for body weight.
Right, which is still used today.
Yeah, so it's £14 to a stone.
Yeah. It's unbelievable that it is still used in the UK today.
Like on TV, you hear it, and...
Yeah, I mean, I've been living so long in Japan now that I just use kilograms.
Yeah.
And I've forgotten how to use stones. It's stupid. Yeah.
It's funny, too, like, reading more about the stone thing, there's the English stone, there's a Scottish stone.
Wow.
Like, every part of England has a different kind of stone thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, stupid.
Back to Daniel.
So, are you going to tell us the weight in...
So, yeah, so 23 years old.
Yep.
He's a jailkeeper.
Uh-huh.
He weighed 32 stone, which is 450 pounds.
Yes.
450 pounds.
That is a lot.
200 kilograms.
That is a lot.
200. At that time as well, right?
Well, I know that a lot of people say that although he was like the fattest man of his time, and he was a circus freak, basically. But people say if you compared it to now, he wouldn't be out of the ordinary.
No.
But when you say that he's what,
200 kilograms.
200 kilograms, that's still huge. That is still like struggling to get out of bed.
Yeah, but that's with him he still like led a very active lifestyle.
Yeah.
Yeah. People...
He was very round.
Oh, you're going to see a picture of... I have a picture of his pants. His trousers.
I want to see his pants.
Yeah, I'll show you later.
Yeah, okay.
A lot of people, historians, have said that maybe the sedentary lifestyle as a goalkeeper...
Yes.
As a jailkeeper...
Yeah.
...attributed to his weight gain. It actually says goalkeeper in my notes.
Oh, my goodness.
So, as a as a jailkeeper, he was basically just sitting down, you know, not doing anything. So he became concerned for his fitness.
Mm-hmm.
So in his spare time, he started exercising and he was able to build up his strength.
Yeah, cut out the Mars bars, Daniel.
To the point where he was able to easily carry 250 kilograms.
Of what? Chocolate.
Wood.
Wow.
Weights. Stones.
Yeah.
Stones that weigh 250. It's so meta.
Oh.
One famous story of his.
Yes.
Was when he saved his dog from being attacked by a dancing bear.
Please do tell me about this dancing bear.
Lambert reportedly struck the bear with a pole and with his left hand punched its head, knocking the bear to the ground to allow his dog to escape.
So, I have a couple of questions.
Yes.
How big was this bear, and why was it dancing?
He was part of an act.
Mm.
Yeah, and so Daniel was watching him while he was walking his dog, and then Daniel's dog got free and was running towards the bear.
Oh, no.
As dogs do.
Yeah.
And then he begged the bear... What would you call that? Handler. He's the bear handler.
The bear keeper.
To please muzzle your bear.
Muzzle your bear.
As to not eat my dog.
Yeah. Muzzle your bear, mate.
But the very, very mean bear handler decided...
I'm going to eat your dog.
He did that. Like, he just let his bear loose on the little puppy.
Oh, my God.
So, Daniel...
Daniel went all, like,
action.
Bloody...
John Wick.
Equalizer.
John Wick, because it's a dog.
It's a dog.
John Wick, so he punched the bear.
Didn't the Equalizer have a dog?
No.
Dog.
So, yeah, so basically he John Wicked that bear.
Nice.
And saved his puppy.
So we're saying Daniel Lambert is the 17th century...
John Wick.
John Wick.
Yeah.
Whoa. Wow.
Another funny story about his size was that... So he continued to teach swimming in Leicester, and he was able to stay afloat with two grown men sitting on his back.
Yeah.
That's so, how big he was.
Well, he was a boat, wasn't he? He was just a boat.
A little raft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can imagine he was fun for the kids. Just loads of them.
I know.
They're 20 just, at a time.
He's teaching them how to swim, but they're basically just hanging on to him.
Yeah, just sitting on his head.
He wasn't exactly the perfect athlete.
No shit.
But he was able to stand on one leg. That's more than you can do.
Does that make you an athlete?
And kick the other leg to a height of 7 feet. Or about 2 meters.
Bullshit.
Yes.
That is impossible. He weighs 200 kilos and he's jumping 7 feet.
He's not jumping, he's kicking his leg up to 7 feet.
Yeah,
He was 5'11".
Uh-huh. Yeah. No way, Jose. Yeah. Okay, I'm a perfect athlete.
Another story is that Daniel, because he didn't like changing his clothes because they were such a hassle to do. Yeah. So he would just basically keep wearing the same clothes for a few days.
Yeah.
Even though he went swimming in them.
Hmm.
And he would just be wet.
No. Huh. He didn't care.
Didn't care.
Yeah, he was too busy doing 7 foot kicks.
Yep.
Yeah, drying himself off. Yeah.
By 1801, so that would make him 31.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel's weight had increased to 40 stone.
40 stone. That is a big boy.
Yeah, 560 pounds.
Yeah.
250 kilograms.
Ooh, you best. Yeah.
And because of this, he had to give up hunting.
I think he had to give up a lot, didn't he, by then?
As he and his horse. Could not keep up with the other hunters. His poor horse had been carrying him before that.
There is no horse that can carry that weight, surely. I mean, I'm not an expert, but yeah.
But he continued his passion for hunting dogs, though, and kept a pack of 30 terriers.
So he just basically just sat in a chair and blasted dogs.
Yeah.
Champion.
By 1805...
Yeah.
Daniel's jail closed.
Mm-hmm.
He had to close it.
He ate it.
Yeah. He ate all the prisoners. And he, at that time, weighed 50 stone. So in 4 years, he gained 10 stone.
Fuck a duck.
So 50 stone, which is 700 pounds.
10 stone is basically a person. It's like a, it's like an average woman's weight. Yeah.
So he gained a whole person in 4 years.
Brilliant.
So he's 700 pounds, which is 320 kilograms.
Yeah.
And that time he had become the heaviest authenticated person up to that point in recorded history.
Wow.
He'd become very sensitive about his weight.
Had he?
Yeah. And refused to be weighed. So how do you think they knew his weight at that time? It's recorded history, so it was legit.
How did they know his weight? Something to do with horses?
I don't know. Well, his friends...
Yeah.
...tricked him into getting weighed by convincing him to go with them to a cockfight in Loughborough.
Yeah.
Did I say that right?
Yeah, you did, yeah.
Yeah!
Loughborough, Leicestershire.
Loughborough. So once he squeezed his way into their carriage, his friends jumped out, and drove the carriage onto a large scale, which I imagine is like for horses and cows and
stuff.
So after deducting the weight of the empty carriage, which they weighed earlier, so it was a master plan.
Yeah.
That's how they got his recorded weight of 50 stones.
Mm, sneaky bastards.
Sneaky friends.
Yeah.
Some friends.
That's a bit sneaky. But the world had to know.
Of course.
Mm. You a big fat fatty. How much you weigh?
No, it... Good for his friends, though, because he recorded history, so he's remembered. There's no ambiguity, like, oh, did he really weigh that much? I don't know.
He really was a big fat fatty.
And then, so when his jail closed, he was very well-liked as a jailkeeper. Mm. He would actually he had a very good personality, very nice.
Yeah, yeah.
He was awarded a pension after it closed, about 50 pounds a year, which is now 4,300 pounds a year.
So still not a lot.
Not a lot. No. Yeah. Now, because of his weight,
Yeah.
He had become unemployable, and that led to Daniel to become a recluse.
Oh,
which
no.
reminded me of The Shut-ins.
A program we've been watching on Channel 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, Shut-ins of England. Mm. Fattest people of England! Shut-ins. It's basically my goal in life, to be a shut-in.
No, it's not. It's your goal for me to be a shut-in.
Oh, yeah, I'm feeding you.
Yeah.
Get your weight up.
So that was 1805.
Right.
The next year, his pension's not really enough.
No.
No, and he needed to earn money.
Yeah.
Why do you think he needed to earn much more money?
Because his medical bills were up because he had massive diabetes and...
No.
High blood pressure.
No.
Mars bars.
No, not his food bill, no. His clothing, his wardrobe bill.
But I thought he only changed every 3 years.
Yeah, but he still needed clothes. And he kept growing, I imagine.
Ooh,
but his budget... Because of his enormous size, his clothing bill was through the roof.
Mm.
Six normal-sized men at that time could fit together inside his waistcoat.
Wow.
And his stockings...
Yeah.
...was the size of a sack.
A sack? Yeah. Sack of potatoes?
Yeah. He just used sacks.
Mm. Was that an official measuring device?
A sack.
Three sacks. Yeah, I'm three sacks wide.
Yeah. Suit cost, Daniel, how much do you think?
Well...
How much do you think now?
Now, a suit for him, I think, would cost about £500.
One whole suit.
Like so, a bottom of the range.
Okay. Suit. Well, this one, it was around £20 at that time in the 1800s, which is about... £1,700 today, a suit.
That's quite a lot.
246,000 yen. 112,000 pesos.
What was it made of?
I think normal material. Wool,
sacks.
Cotton.
Dogs? Well, you got loads of animals. Can you make a suit himself? Lazy boy.
He can't with his little
sausage fingers.
Yeah. Can't do it.
Can't thread the needle, can
No. So he thought about putting himself on exhibition.
Yes.
In April 1806, he commissioned to have a special carriage made to take him to London.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the ad he placed in the Times. Ready?
I'm ready.
Exhibition. Mr. Daniel Lambert of Leicester, the greatest curiosity in the world, who, at the age of 36, weighs upwards of 50 stone. Mm. And in brackets, 14 pounds to the stone. Mr. Lambert will see company at his house, number 53 Piccadilly, opposite St. James Church, from 12 to 5 o'clock. Admittance, 1 shilling.
Nice, yeah. Okay.
Mm. Where is St. James Church? Do we go there?
No.
Is it still up?
I think it's still up, but if I recall, I think it's a small church.
Mm.
So, yeah, nothing to write home about.
Okay.
But I'm sure it's still there, where, you know, Piccadilly and everything. Mm. Yeah.
It became very fashionable at that time to visit Daniel. Because at that time, actually, spectators were not only impressed with his size, but they appreciated his intelligence.
Oh.
And enjoyed his personality.
Ah, so he wasn't just a freak show.
No, the upper classes of London society were amazed at his intelligent conversation and his extensive knowledge of breeding and sports.
Oh.
And at that time...
A delightful chap.
At that time, obesity was not really considered a bad thing.
No.
No. And Daniel was generally considered a wonder to be marveled at rather than a freak.
He wouldn't be on the Channel 4 documentary series.
No, he wouldn't be a shut-in.
No.
He even met King George III.
Wow.
King George went to see him.
Huh.
I wonder if he paid.
I doubt it. Doubt that.
I wonder. And but the big news that got the press all excited was when he met Joseph Borulaski.
Who the fuck is that?
He's a Polish-born dwarf and musician. He was about 3 feet.
Daniel ate him.
No. Their meeting... Stop saying that. Their meeting was the subject of great interest. The biggest man and the smallest man of the country.
Woo.
They compared their clothes and concluded that one of Daniel's sleeves...
Yeah.
...was enough to make an entire coat for Joseph.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Did they start charging to see the both of them?
No, he only visited.
2 shillings. Come on a Wednesday afternoon, 1.5 shillings.
Oh, is there a half shilling?
Oh, there's 0.5 shilling.
Oh.
And sure.
0.5 shilling.
0.5 shilling. Yeah.
So, a man of his size, of course, caught the attention of the medical professionals in London.
Right.
Shortly after his arrival in London, the Medical and Physical Journal published an article about him.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what they wrote.
Go ahead.
So they confirmed his weight at 50 stone and measured his height as 5 feet 11 inches.
Mm-hmm.
A thorough medical examination found that his bodily functions worked correctly and that he breathed freely.
Hmm. Mm. Oh, how much are we trusting medicine back then? These checkups.
1800s.
Yeah.
He was described as active and mentally alert.
Oh, you seem fine, mate.
Well-read and with an excellent memory.
Mm.
He was fond of singing and had a normal speaking voice.
Oh, delightful.
Which show, not the Fat Albert voice, I guess.
Funny, funny, funny.
Actually, that, they said, because it says here, like, normal speaking voice, which showed no signs of pressure on the lungs.
You mean like mine?
Doctors did find tumefaction of his feet and legs, which is fluid retention or swelling. So his legs.
Yeah.
Doctors also found accumulation of fat within the abdomen.
No shit.
I thought you were going to say that.
Yeah.
But other than scaly and thickened skin on his legs, he had no health problems.
Oh.
Yeah.
So maybe...
Imagine that.
He was athletic after all.
Daniel claimed that he is able to walk a quarter of a mile, which is 400 meters, without difficulty.
Oh, what a ledge.
He slept regularly for no more than 8 hours per night and always with his window opened.
Oh.
And this one I find incredibly hard to believe.
Yeah.
He was never heard to snore.
Because he never slept with anyone.
No, right? But they said that they were saying like his windows were always open while he slept.
Yeah.
And no one ever heard him snore.
Wouldn't that be delightful?
He also never napped during the day.
Really?
I had a nap after I woke up today.
Yeah. I had a nap at work today. Yeah.
So this guy is healthier than the both of us.
I'm struggling to breathe now, to be
fatty,
honest.
Fatty boom booms. Fatty fatty boom booms.
Yeah.
So, it's possible, it's impossible to be certain about what caused Daniel Lambert's extreme weight.
Mm.
Many medical reasons, but he never really checked all the boxes for these diseases. Like, if they'd say, like, it was because of this, but he didn't show this, but he did this, and then the thyroid thing.
Yeah.
But then he didn't have, like, the, they call moon face, where your face would be, like, round as a moon.
Yeah.
So, it was, that's why it was impossible, and then,
But didn't he just eat a shed load of food?
But it was so rapid.
Mm.
But they said, like, probably because when he became, like, sedentary when he went, he became the jailkeeper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sedentary. Is that how you say it?
Sedentary.
I sit still a lot, and I eat nothing but junk food, and I'm still, like, 13 stone.
Mm.
So.
Yeah.
Maybe less.
Mm. So, in September, he did become depressed a little bit. So, that's why after living in London for 5 months, Daniel moved back to Leicester, a wealthy man. Very wealthy. So he was very popular.
He made a lot of money from the show.
Very.
Not even a show, was it? He was just
there. Just come see me.
Just come and have a drink with me.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I should do that.
You gotta be a fatty, fatty bum bum.
Well, I can do that.
He went back to doing the things that he loved, which was breeding sporting dogs and champion cocks.
Champion cocks.
Yeah.
Do you love a champion cock?
In December of the same year, Daniel went on a brief fundraising tour in Birmingham and Coventry.
Oh.
Don't know if... Because when you think fundraising, you think it's for a cause, right?
Yeah, but it was for him.
I don't know if it was for a cause or if it was for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. In 1807, he went on another series of tours all over England. He not only exhibited himself, but took the opportunity to sell some of his prize-winning dogs.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So like he became really famous for his dogs, actually.
Oh. So he was quite the entrepreneur.
Really. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he did well for himself.
In June 1809,
How old is Daniel now?
Now he is 39.
39.
Yeah.
Okay, in 1809.
Yeah.
Okay.
He set off on another tour of East Anglia.
Yes.
To conclude in Stamford during the Stamford races. He was a bit of a gambler.
Yeah.
Do you know the Stamford races? Is that still a thing?
Rings a bell. Mm. And I'm also thinking there's a Stamford in East Anglia now.
Mm.
Yeah.
This tour was intended to be his last, as he was then rich enough to retire.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he was going to retire before 40.
Yeah.
Good boy.
Yeah. Well, on this tour, Daniel was weighed in Ipswich.
Ipswich. So, Ipswich. Where we're talking about is East Anglia is, like, on the east side of England.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his weight clocked in on... Can you guess? This is the last recorded weight.
I'm going to say, kilograms-wise, he's got to be 350.
No, not... No. 335.
Ooh.
That's pretty close.
Not bad.
Yeah, so 52 stone and 11 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is classed as super
mega
morbidly obese.
Oh, yeah. He shouldn't be alive.
No.
Basically. So following his arrival at Stamford, Daniel sent a message to the Stamford Mercury ordering advertisements and handbills. For his exhibition.
Yeah.
He met the printer at the Wagon and Horses Inn where he was staying.
Wonderful pub.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had to stay on the first floor as he could not climb the stairs anymore.
So, yeah, he's not exactly athletic anymore.
He can't do the 7-foot kicks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He could do a 3-foot kick. Bullshit.
On the morning of June 21st, 1809, Daniel woke at his usual time and appeared in good health. As he began to shave, he complained of breathing difficulties. 10 minutes later, he collapsed and died. There was no autopsy, and the exact cause of Daniel's death is unknown. The most plausible cause of death is a pulmonary embolism.
Yeah.
So it's like it's a blockage of an artery in the lungs. That's why he had the difficulty breathing.
Yeah.
And then most likely there was a blood clot, which was his major problem area, in his legs.
Yeah.
Right, that was his major problem area. It could travel up to your lungs, and which caused his sudden shortness of breath and inevitable death. His body rapidly began to putrefy.
Yes.
So there was no way they could return his body to Leicester. Yeah, there's no way.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah. The following day, Daniel's body was placed in a specially made coffin.
Yep.
With wheels.
Mm.
Yeah. It was 193 centimeters long.
Yeah.
But it's the width.
Yeah.
It was 132 centimeters wide, and standard coffins now are 60 centimeters wide.
Wow, so it was almost a square.
It was, basically. yeah.
Wow.
And it was deeper as well.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, the coffin was built inside his room in the Wagon Horse, but it was so big they had to break down a window and a wall to get it out of the inn.
Wow.
Yeah. they dug a grave at the rear, at the back of St. Martin's Church in Stamford with a sloping approach. It wasn't just like a hole.
Yeah.
Yeah, so to avoid the need to lower his coffin, so they just slid it in.
Yeah, they just had a ramp.
Yeah. On June 23rd.
Yeah.
Which is a special day.
My birthday.
It is your birthday.
Yeah.
On June 23rd, 20 men took 30 minutes to pull Daniel's coffin into the grave.
Do you think that I am Daniel Lambert reincarnated?
He did not. Why? He died in the 1800s.
Yeah. But, you know, yeah, same. But my birthday is when he was lowered.
Buried.
Yeah. It's a bit spooky. And I'm pretty plump. I got problems.
But
yeah.
You're not an expert at field sports, and
I can do the 7 foot kick.
No, you can't. You can't even lift your leg past your hip.
I can do 2 feet. I've got 2 feet.
I'm almost done.
Alright.
So Daniel's friends paid for a large gravestone inscribed in remembrance of that prodigy in nature, Daniel Lambert, a native of Leicester, who was possessed of an exalted and convivial mind, and in personal greatness had no competitor. He measured 3 feet 1 inch round the leg.
Oh my god.
9 feet 4 inches round the body, and weighed 52 stone 11 pounds.
Yeah.
He departed this life on the 21st of June, 1809, aged 39 years.
Well, it was good that they put all that, because he was proud of, you know, how big he was.
Yeah, and it wasn't a thing. He wasn't considered a freak.
No.
So after his death, Daniel Lambert is still a popular character in Leicester, described in 2009 by the Leicester Mercury as one of the city's most cherished icons.
Yeah.
Several local public houses and businesses are named after him. And Daniel Lambert is also a popular figure in Stamford. And the local football team, Stamford AFC, are nicknamed the Daniels after him.
Really?
Yeah.
That's nice.
I know. In 2009, on the 200th anniversary of his death, Leicester celebrated Daniel Lambert Day, and over 800 people attended an event in his name at Newark House's museum.
Yep, which is the kind of Daniel Lambert Museum, Newark House's Museum. Yeah. Last time we went to Leicester, I walked you around that area, and we walked past that, but you didn't know who Daniel Lambert was at the time.
No.
So. But do you know that they have some of his memorabilia?
Oh, yeah. They have clothes and stuff. And also in Stamford as well, they made a museum for him.
But the most famous thing in the museum is his chair.
Ooh.
They have his original chair that's obviously huge.
Yeah, well, look at this. I'm showing you a picture of his trousers.
His pants, folks, are like the size of my bed.
They're meant to be trousers, but they look like shorts.
It's a tent. Yeah. It's a square.
Yeah. So that's it. That's Daniel Lambert.
Very cool. Mm. Yeah. I didn't know that much about him, I'll be honest.
Very interesting.
Daniel Lambert.
My lovely one.
My lovely one. Next time we go to Leicester, one day. When all of this is over.
Yeah.
Next time we'll go to the Newark Museum. And you can sit in his chair.
I'm going to cry, maybe.
Right.
You can sit on the chair?
I doubt you can sit on the chair.
You just said that.
Maybe. I seem to recall pictures of people sitting on his chair and wearing his pants. Mm. And, stroking his taxidermed puppies.
He's got taxidermed puppies?
No, not at all. I don't know why you believe anything I say.
Because... you're my husband.
Oh.
So that was mine, Daniel Lambert. Show me yours.
I will show you mine. That's what I said on our first date. Okay.
Yeah, duh.
Before I get into my main history part, I want to give you a little Titbit.
No.
Okay, I'm going to give you a little titbit. Okay, because this week we're going to move away from the Philippines and we're flying across to the land of the rising sun.
Japan,
which is where you're from. One of the two, where you're from. Yeah, well, I want to hit you with this little factoid first, which I found quite interesting. Was on my travels, doing my research.
Yeah.
I saw this fact about there was a survey taken for this TV program in Japan. It was in it was a while ago, 2006. But people, members of the public, were asked to pick their most influential person throughout history. Because like the top six were Japanese historical figures, right? Quite predictable.
Yeah.
But then it gets to number seven. And number seven is Mother Teresa. Yeah. I just can't imagine them interviewing people on the street. And who is the most influential person in history? Mother Teresa.
Why not, though?
I
mean, she was very worldwide.
She was. Okay, I'll give you Mother Teresa. Number 10.
Yeah.
Princess Di.
That I understand.
Princess Diana.
No, that I understand totally.
Was she influential?
Well, it's because she died so tragically.
I mean, people love her, but influential, really?
You connect her, because before she passed away, she did a lot of charity work, didn't she?
Okay.
Like, she even paired up with Mother Teresa. That's maybe why.
Could be the reason.
In the Philippines, a lot of people adore Princess Di.
Everyone adores Princess Di, but pretty strange choice.
I guess from your perspective as a Brit.
Yeah, very strange. Moving down to number 51 on their chart.
Yeah.
Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee. Pick anyone in history.
You know.
Bruce Lee.
When I was younger.
You were a karate expert.
No, my dad tricked me to believing that he studied under Bruce Lee.
Really?
We were watching his movies and he told me that was his teacher.
Good lord. And you're still as gullible today. Aren't you, hey?
I'm very trusting.
Yeah. 92 on the list of 100.
Yeah.
Big old Abraham Lincoln. Really? Yeah. The old slave owner himself.
Yeah. I know, but still, for Japanese people, I guess they're like, I want to sound educated.
Yeah, I wouldn't even thought they'd know Abraham Lincoln.
Cared about him.
Yeah. And finally, number 99 was...
Just got in. Yeah.
99. Sherlock creator.
Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Exactly, him. I'm surprised anyone even knows him.
No, they know him.
From the TV series.
From the manga, Conan.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Not the TV series, the manga, you know Conan, right?
Yeah.
He's named after Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Not the Cumberbatch one.
No, not Benedict Cumberbatch's.
Him as
well. It's the manga.
All right.
It's the manga, yeah. That's why his name's Conan.
Not the comedian.
That's why he went to Japan, Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, I remember.
I understand Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Anyway, funny little list. Yeah. Gotta throw that in there. Tid.
It's a D.
What's a tid? Oh. I know what a bit is. What's a tid? Okay, so my main focus this week, I want to tell you folks about Japan's economic bubble years.
Okay.
Now, I'll give you a little disclaimer.
Uh-huh.
I am dumb as a rake. When it comes to economics and figures, numbers,
okay,
I don't know my head from my tidbit. So this is the Japanese economic bubble through the eyes of Max.
Very brave of you to do it.
I know. Yeah. So the Japanese bubble years, as they were known, were from 1986 to 1991, right? Only 5 years.
The year I was born,
86. Yeah. It was a time when basically Japan exploded and real estate prices and stock market prices got vastly inflated, and Japan just went batshit crazy with money.
Why?
I'll tell you.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
What happened? Tamagotchi? Well, no.
At the end of the Second World War, right, until the mid-80s, Japan, like, rebuilt its economy and was doing well, and then America was getting a bit scared. Japan was the second biggest economy
at that time
in the 80s in the world. America was a bit worried. They were like, we can't have this. The big nations were worried as well about America. They were getting too far ahead. Okay. They were like, we're closing in on them.
Yeah.
But we need to do something about it. So they all got together and signed this agreement to, like, limit America's prices down a bit. Again, I'm not an expert here, right? Just bear with me. Japan's stock prices just went through the bloody roof, right?
So the agreement only covered America, not other countries.
Indeedy-do.
Oh, they didn't see that coming?
No. Oh. And so all of a sudden, the banks in Japan...
Yeah.
Just, they started borrowing trillions, right? They started borrowing and started loaning.
Lending.
Okay. Started lending far beyond their capacity. And Japan just exploded, right? Japan just had overconfidence, right?
Mm.
And in 1986, the Bank of Japan slashed interest rates, causing virtually uncontrolled capital spending. The yen doubled in value against
US
the dollar. Oh. And this is what caused everything to go funky doodle. Right? And suddenly, land prices, this was a big thing.
Yeah.
Land prices in Tokyo just, oh my god. They just spiked through the roof, right? In there, just in like 1 year, the land prices jumped almost 50% in value.
Wow.
Right? And suddenly, just everyone was selling land in Tokyo and becoming millionaires.
Can you sell to foreigners in Japan? I know in the Philippines, foreigners cannot own land.
Yes, you can. And it was said at the time,
yeah,
if America had sold the land that they owned in Tokyo, they would have covered their national debt.
Wow.
In one go.
Did this bubble have a name?
It's called the economic bubble.
Okay.
It's called the bubble years. Or in Japanese, baburu.
Baburu.
Baburu. Baburu. That's it.
Shabondama.
Exactly, right? Exactly. I mean, and during the peak, it was said that the Tokyo Imperial Palace grounds were estimated to be worth more than all the land in the entire state of California. Just the Imperial Palace land, right? It's incredible. And it wasn't just businesses and industry that was making all the money.
Yeah.
Like normal people, residential land jumped from about 1,200 US dollars per square meter to just double. It doubled. 2,500. It doubled. Right?
So, like, there were people buying that land. But did they have to borrow money to buy the...
Well, then the banks... They were like, we need money. Then the banks were just lending money. Mm. Like, businesses were booming. Japanese businesses were buying, like, Pebble Beach Golf Course was bought by Japanese people in America. That's one of the most famous golf courses.
Yeah.
Like, American stuff was being bought up by Japanese, right?
Ooh.
It was crazy. Japan was just starting to dominate the world's economic force at this time.
Yeah.
Post-World War II, Japan was one of the poorest countries in the world.
Yeah, around that time, so my dad was born 55. And they actually, so he was in school, so they actually received rations from America.
Really?
The same as in the Philippines. So at that time, when my mom was in elementary school as well, they had this bread called the Nutribun.
Yeah.
It was made from flour that was sent in from America.
Ah.
Yeah, and that same flour was also sent to Japan because they needed it. And I think that's when, like, they started doing the breads, from the American flour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. Mm. Japan post-World War, the wages were in line with the Philippines, Sri Lanka.
Like basically third world countries.
The economy was the same, yeah. You know, they rebuilt, but were quite stagnant until all of a sudden, mid-80s, all of this money hit like a beast.
Yeah.
Because people had grown up with nothing, all of a sudden everyone had money, and people didn't know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
And all this Western stuff started appearing in Japan because people could afford it, and they didn't know what to do. Suddenly society was so luxurious.
Yeah.
People were like, you know, we're going to buy 20 cars, we're going to buy massive properties. And I think at that time,
probably people started to travel too, because that's about the time my dad moved to the Philippines.
Yeah. And people thought that this was here to stay.
Forever.
This is going to stay forever. Yes. We're going to have so much money. I mean, architecture that we see in Japan now, like a lot of it came from the bubble years when people were just building anything, you know, outlandish.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it started to spread to, like, rural and smaller places, like Sapporo in the north.
Yeah.
That became a big neon city.
Yeah.
That's when all the futuristic stuff started coming.
Ah.
But, of course, it couldn't last forever.
Uh-uh.
And in 1991, only 5 years, lasted 5 years, it all crashed down and banks started to close. Yeah, it was the whole Lehman Brothers thing. It was just banks started to close and...
Is it Lehman Brothers?
Exactly that. And they were like, real estate value and asset losses amounted to like more than 10 trillion yen.
Oh, no.
You know, there was forfeiting of everything. It was terrible. I'll tell you a story that kind of sums this all up, right? I've told you about the numbers and everything that I do not understand one bit, but I do think it's interesting. So there was this one guy during the bubble years.
Yeah.
He was in the top 6 richest businessmen in Japan.
In Japan.
In Japan. Mm. He was worth a shed load. His name was Kawamata Sachihiko.
Okay.
And he's now in his 70s. He owned, he was worth 300 billion.
Yeah.
At the height of the bubble, right? That's what, $30 million maybe?
Yeah.
Around that. He was worth that in about 1988. He was one of the richest people in Japan. And he was ranked above Masatoshi Ito, the founder of... 7-Eleven Holdings. 7-Eleven.
Ah, 7-Eleven.
He was that rich, right?
Ito-Yokado. Oh!
There you go.
Ito-Yokado!
That's him, yeah.
Oh!
But this guy was richer than him at the time.
Wow, richer. Wow.
But then the bank started closing. It all started collapsing. The economy just... The floor fell out of it.
Yeah.
And suddenly he owed so much money. Because he'd taken out so many loans.
Yeah.
And he couldn't... He couldn't repay it and everything.
And also, like, the land prices were probably half of what they were when he bought
them. Exactly, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, no.
So, in 2009, he declared bankruptcy.
Oh, no.
And he's had, unfortunately for him, his family left him.
What?
He's had 2 strokes, heart attack, and he fell off a cliff.
What?
When he was on a bulldozer. And he's got a dent in his forehead.
What?
Don't laugh!
No, yes. What?
And now, he lives in a manga cafe, like an internet cafe. He's homeless.
What? Oh no!
But, he says, I know I may appear to be a sorry old man who lost everything and has nowhere to go. But I've never been happier in my life because I've got no responsibility now. That's or no true. Debts. He had it really
bad. How
does
he pay for the manga kissa?
Begging. Nobody knows. Yeah.
Oh no.
So that's what. That's a kind of typical.
Yeah.
Example of.
He sounds. What happened. He sounds like a lottery winner.
Yeah.
Who just. You know.
But it was just bad luck. He didn't, because he just did what everyone else was doing.
I know, and you know, you know, with bubbles, like it really that saying that the higher,
yeah,
the higher you go, the bigger the fall.
Right. Yeah. The fashion of the era is well known. That was kind of outlandish, kind of club fashion.
Shoulder pads.
Big shoulder pads. Yeah. It was 80s. I mean, now when you look at Japan. You think reserved, you think yeah. just, you know, Onesan, like sister yeah, fashion.
Everyone's wearing like muted colors.
It's all beige and yeah. it's, yeah, it's all office ladies and whatnot.
Yeah.
But in that time, people were just like, we the bigger the better. It was gold, sparkles, you know, there was a whole Ganguro
yeah.
movement of fashion
yeah.
and para para, if you know that. There was huge thing that, I mean, like, every industry was just losing the plot, like the Japanese car industry.
Yeah.
They were, because they just had unlimited money to develop stuff, they just went bananas. Like, for example, Toyota developed and made a turbine engine car that went 30 miles an hour and was as loud as a jet plane.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pointless. Yeah. But they were like, we're going to make it.
We're making it. People are going to buy it.
We're going to make it.
Let's go.
Yeah. And another example of this stupidity was an art gallery was built in kind of rural Japan in Mie.
Yeah.
Mie Prefecture. And it was a copy of the Louvre. They built a copy of the Louvre and they expected it to be world famous, right? And they filled it with copies.
What?
Of
all
the
all the paintings were also
everything
copies?
Was copied, right?
What?
Everything's copied, and they had a grand opening, and they thought the world would come, and there was one person from the Louvre
who went there,
who came, and was just, meh, what is this nonsense?
Is it still open?
I don't know if it's still there. So, right? I doubt it. Yeah. Yeah, the head of the Louvre attended the opening. But apparently no one else batted an eyelid, so...
Oh, no.
Terrible, eh? Yeah. That was the bubble. But I've got some phrases for you.
Mm.
And I want to... There were a lot of Japanese phrases, like, that came out of the bubble years.
Yeah.
And I want to see if you can work out what they mean.
Okay.
Okay. Phrases for people.
For people.
Because you imagine at the time, people are just going out drinking in limousines, and apparently they'd have cocktails with gold dust in, and coffees and everything. And it was, the clubbing scene was maniac, and yeah, women would just expect the world.
Yeah.
So tell me, what is this?
Okay.
Ashi-kun.
I actually know that.
Yeah?
Yeah, because my dad has taught me that.
Okay, what is it?
Because, okay, backstory. When I was in university in Manila, I had this guy friend who would take me to the airport every time if I needed to go to to back home to Cebu.
Yeah.
And my dad said that he's your ashikun. So I asked him, what is an ashikun? It's like, you're just using him for his car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was pretty much. But it meant more, it was a little bit more sleazy.
Yeah.
It meant like... men who were used for their car, only for their women would use these ashikuns for their car and transport to the clubs, to the bars, to the karaoke's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I used him for.
There you go. Okay, how about this one?
Yeah.
Meishikun.
Meishikun?
Mm.
Meishi, like food meishi?
It does mean something to do with food, yeah.
So if an ashikun transports you, does a meishikun feed you?
Yeah, it basically meant man
yeah.
who was willing to buy women fancy meals.
You're not a Meishikun.
I'm not a Meishikun. No. I'm a cheap ass.
You're a Famirestokun.
Famirestrantkun, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, good
There's
job.
There's a Meishikun.
Last one.
Yeah.
Okay. Hanakin.
Hanakin, not Hanakun.
Hana, as in flower.
Yeah.
Hanakin.
So see, if you had said Hanakun, I was it a guy who gave women flowers?
No.
No, what is Hanakin? I don't know.
It meant the name given to the last working day of the week during the bubble era. All right? Because, you know, kin is gold and Friday. Yeah. And they'd go out spending huge amounts.
But why flower?
Of money. I don't know.
No. Okay. So they used kin, you know, as a...
Kin.
Kin is gold. Okay, I see.
Yeah, and since the bubble burst... Oh, no.
Yeah.
Since the bubble burst, the following 10 years are called the Lost Decade, right?
So where they tried to recover. 91 to 2001.
Yeah, and it's been like 30 years. Plus.
Oh.
And Japan is still recovering.
From that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I think like 2001 was when my dad's travel agency company closed.
Mm.
Yeah. Because also mixed in with no more use of travel agencies. Or maybe it was later than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it's all related.
Yeah.
So for 5 years, Japan just let
nuts.
It just let go.
That's why now everyone's so conservative, maybe because they learned from that bubble.
That's what they say, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh wow.
So there's a reason behind everything.
Yeah.
And we should visit the Louvre.
Let's go, Mie.
In Mie, yeah. Mm. All right. Well, there you go.
Interesting.
Short and sweet.
Yeah.
Hope you enjoyed that, folks.
We got a fatty fatty boom boom Daniel Lambert and a fatty fatty bubble.
Fatty fatty bubble. Daniel's bubble.
Ah!
Name of the episode. Yeah. If you like our podcast, feel free to give us a rating on Apple.
Yeah, Apple Podcasts.
And even a little review.
Yeah.
If you feel like it.
Mm.
Because we're gonna get even better, and we'll look back at this and think, what were you doing?
We're planning to get microphones.
Ooh.
So it'll be better quality.
Maybe next week's episode.
Yeah.
Might feature technology. Yeah. Okay, should we cut it?
Yep, let's cut it.
All right, see you next time.
Bye.